Hey everyone, it's Ariel Helwani. Thank you so very much for downloading today's episode. It's going to be a great one. I promise you this. We got a lot of fun things planned for all of you. But before we get to today's show, let me tell you about our good friends over at ZipRecruiter. Yes, ZipRecruiter. We love ZipRecruiter. You know, when it comes to scoring great hires for your business, you may be up against a few obstacles like an overwhelming amount of resumes, too many applicants, but not enough of the right ones, trouble spotting the most qualified candidates in a sea of possibilities. That's why you need ZipRecruiter on your team. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. First, when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology hustles for you to find the right people with the right expertise and the right experience for your job and invites them to apply. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Yes, I said the first day. So to try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Also, I want to remind you that you need to check out the Scott Van Pelt podcast. It's called the SV Pod. Scott Van Pelt, pound for pound, one of the nicest and most talented people here at ESPN. I'm a huge fan of his and his new podcast. This week, he talked about where to find the best Diet Coke and school hunting in D.C. Subscribe to the SV Pod and this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And remember that if you like or dislike our podcast, and let's be honest, you probably don't dislike it, you probably love it, you should tell us in the reviews. And if you're lucky, TST himself might just read your review on the air. All right, without further ado, here's today's show. On this Wednesday, February 26, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Thank you very much for joining us on another Wednesday afternoon here in New York City. A rainy Wednesday afternoon here in New York City. A lot to discuss, as always. UFC Auckland in the books. UFC headed to beautiful Norfolk, Virginia on Saturday, and they will be featuring the very first UFC flyweight title fight that doesn't feature either Demetrius Johnson or Henry Cejudo. How about that? The division is about 8 years old. It started in 2012. You'll recall the semifinal tournament that they had, the two-round tournament there. You had Joseph Benavidez and Yasuhiro Urushitani in Australia. Also, Ian McCall and Demetrius Johnson. They fought on the same night. Benavidez won. There was the drama and the controversy surrounding the McCall DJ fight, the scoring and all that nonsense. So they ran it back in Fort Lauderdale, Sunrise to be exact. DJ won that fight. And then in September of 2012, we had the first ever UFC flyweight title fight. UFC 152 was Demetrius Johnson against Joseph Benavidez. DJ won that fight. They later rematched and DJ knocked him out in Sacramento. Remember that one? That was shocking. And so Joseph Benavidez enters this fight 0-3 in Zuffa title fights, 0-1 in World Extreme Cage Fighting. The bantamweight division fought Dominic Cruz, and of course 0-2 as a UFC flyweight. And I was asked earlier if this means that the division is still on thin ice. Does it mean the division is saved? To me, this is a clear indication that the division has been saved, and Henry Cejudo deserves a lot of credit for that. Now, it's disappointing that he's not defending the title and that he's ultimately been stripped. He will officially be stripped come Saturday once the fight happens, just to save themselves in case the fight doesn't actually come to fruition. But to me, the fact that they are actually moving on with it and book two guys who aren't maybe the most marketable guys or the most famous guys, the fact that they're moving on with it and booking a new title fight without Cejudo, to me, says that they're in the flyweight business. And so there's a big opportunity here for either Joseph Benavidez or Davison Figueiredo to assert themselves as the new face of the flyweight division. You got some other names that have been doing good things. Kaikar France with a big win this past weekend in New Zealand. There's Brandon Moreno, who's looked good. Alexandre Pantoja. And one guy that I'm really high on, Askar Askarov, who's 90% I do believe, deaf and is unbeaten in his MMA career and unbeaten in the UFC and a former ACB champion. So there's a lot to like, and there's an opportunity there for the new crop to assert themselves. And there's an opportunity for a couple of women's featherweights as well to assert themselves. There's two women's featherweight fights on this card. And what I like so much about this card is that there's two divisions being featured that have been sort of the, the black sheep of the UFC, and they're getting the spotlight on them. I think that's kind of fun. So looking forward to that. We'll talk about that on the program. Of course, still digesting what happened this past weekend, not only in Auckland, but in Las Vegas between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. A few things have happened since that fight, since my show on Monday. Really enjoyed that conversation with Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing. A lot of people enjoyed it as well. He's quite the character. And yes, I have enjoyed the No Context Hearn Twitter and Instagram page. I really enjoy the Instagram page, I must say. It's a lot of fun. And he's a great character, and a character that I think we are lacking in MMA. And so I'm going to actually keep that train moving along on this particular show. Frank Warren is the longtime promoter of Tyson Fury, now his co-promoter, and one of the more famous, successful, recognizable promoters in British boxing history. He was there, of course, on Saturday. He'll join us. In fact, I will say he asked to be on the show after Eddie Hearn's appearance. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what and hearing what Frank Warren wants to talk about. All of a sudden, we're in the boxing business, my friends. But I do think that there's a lot of parallels, of course. And I do think that there's a lot in boxing that MMA could learn from. I'm not just talking about, the culture of throwing in the towel and the culture of, the way you build someone up in tune-up fights, things I've talked about. But I'm talking about the business side of things. There's a lot that I think MMA can learn from. The idea, once again, that boxing is struggling, that boxing is dead, that boxing needs a shot of adrenaline is absolutely false. And I think that was very clear on Saturday night. And now there's all this drama as far as the rematch clause and where it's going to happen and what happens with Joshua and his fight. I love it. I can't get enough of it. So I'm looking forward to talking to Frank Warren later in the program. Also, as you may have heard last week, TST is not with us this week. TST is somewhere in Scandinavia. He sent me a text with a photo of his sleeping conditions, and I almost threw up in my mouth. I mean, he's sleeping in a hostel. The man's a grown man. He's sleeping in a hostel. He brought one bag. He's wearing two pairs of pants on the plane. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. But I am told that he has sent us his minimalist tip of the week from overseas. It is a taped version of the tip, but he is staying true to form, and he has done his duty, and he has sent us a tip. So I'm looking forward to that. I've not heard it. I don't know what he talks about, but I'm looking forward to it. First and foremost, though, I'm looking forward to catching up with our old pal New York Rick, who's kind enough to carve out some time out of his busy schedule of tweeting and Instagramming and doing whatever the kids do these days, TikToking. Are you a TikTok guy, New York Rick? Are you into that?
I don't have a personal TikTok. I think that would be a little bit weird. I think I'm a little too old for that platform to be creating content, but I do keep an eye on it. Because I do have to keep an eye on emerging trends and things like that. So I do consume TikTok, but I do not post on TikTok.
Is there an ESPN MMA TikTok page?
There is not an MMA page, but there is and will continue to be MMA content on the ESPN TikTok. So you should follow that if you're on TikTok.
And what is it? Just ESPN? Is that
it's at ESPN, yeah.
Wow, okay. I have never used TikTok, but I hear people talking about it all the time. Now, in terms of like the age rank, is it TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter being for the older crowd? Is that fair or no? Maybe Facebook.
I would say that is correct, with Facebook being above those as
okay.
well.
But that's the hierarchy.
That is the order from youngest to highest, okay. To oldest rather.
Let me ask you about what I just said regarding the flyweight division. A bit of a spoiler. Maybe this comes out at around the same time. I just did Ariel the Bad Guy, and Chael said that he still feels like the division is on thin ice, that it needs to be saved, that it's not an indication, the fact that this fight is happening on Saturday between Benavidez and Figueiredo, that the fight or the division, I should say, has been saved. I viewed it obviously completely different, as I just said. How do you view this fight? Is it an indication that the division has been saved, or is it incumbent upon either Benavidez or Figueiredo, once they win the fight, to then save the division?
2 months ago on this very program, one of my predictions for the year was that the flyweight division would be shuttered.
Oh my God.
So I'm with Chael P on this one. I don't think that the flyweight division has been saved. In fact, I think that this title fight does not mean that at all. I definitely think that it is still on thin ice.
How is that possible? Because they had an easy out. Once Cejudo determined that he would not be coming back, that's the perfect opportunity to close it down. The fact that they actually found two contenders, worthy contenders, to fight for a new belt, a vacant title, isn't that all that you need to know?
Would anybody, now come along with me here, would okay. anybody be upset if they got rid of the division after they were crowned champion, except for the champion? I don't think that there's a difference between choosing to close down the division back when Henry Cejudo was essentially forced to vacate the belt, or in the future. There's really
the
no difference.
It
really.
Fight?
That's a good question.
I can't believe
you're asking the wrong person.
This
I don't
is a
know.
Crazy take. I mean, you're just doing it to fill a slot? Come on. They wouldn't actually make a new title just to fill a slot. For
I
one
would
night only.
Well, it's not a new title. It's an
it's
existing
title. But it's
and,
a vacant
and
title.
Whoever the champion is come Saturday will be, you know, if my prediction comes to fruition, will be the final champion, not Henry Cejudo. And I think there's a significance there. I think there's like a fresh moving on from the days or fresh moving on. That doesn't make sense. There's a moving on from the days of Henry Cejudo's Triple C reign. And then we can wrap it up nicely.
So your prediction is not only it's going to cease to exist come next year, but the winner of this fight on Saturday will never defend the title. This is a one and done for them.
I don't know about never defend, but I don't think they will have many title defenses. I think this will happen before the end of the year.
My God, I am shocked. I can't believe anyone feels this way. The fact that they create...
Sounds like Chael P agrees.
Yeah, well, actually he does, yes. I don't know if he's predicting that it's going to be shut down like you are, but to me, all I needed to know was, all right, hey, they're making a title fight, a vacant title fight between two guys. And by the way, first ever title fight, maybe I said this at the beginning, that doesn't feature either Demetrius and Henry. That's kind of significant. That feels like, you know, a fresh coat of paint on the division. I'm surprised to hear you say that. Now, isn't it crazy that – crazy maybe is not the best term to use, but you'll see what I'm saying. The fact that this fight is happening on the same week that Cejudo's next fight at 135 gets announced against Jose Aldo and how polarizing of a decision that was. Isn't that funny? Like, I feel like if you would have asked most people, and I'll ask you this question, which fight would you rather see Henry Cejudo, you know, compete in next? A fight against Benavidez, a rematch against Benavidez. Remember their first fight, tough finale, was a great one. We all wished that it was five rounds because it was so much fun and so close in a three-round fight. Or Jose Aldo, which are you picking?
Between those two options, I would like to see Benavidez and Cejudo. There's a story there. I think Benavidez is much more of a rightful contender. Jose Aldo. Now, stylistically, I want to you know present this properly. Stylistically, I have no problems with the matchup between Jose Aldo and Henry Cejudo. And I think, like most people, I do have problems with how Jose Aldo got there on the back of a loss, on the back of back-to-back losses, and so. For me, I would prefer to see Henry Cejudo against Joseph Benavidez. But stylistically, I have to admit, it's hard for me to get too upset about getting Jose Aldo versus Henry Cejudo.
What do you mean? Wait a second. So you're just going to ignore the losing streak?
I'm not. In fact, I mentioned it. I'm not going to ignore it at all.
Stylistically doesn't count. You can't, because any fight stylistically would be okay. Like, you could say that about a bunch of people against the champion. Oh, stylistically, but don't you have to earn it? Don't you have to actually warrant a
meritocracy
title
in MMA is dead. It does not exist anymore.
When did
now,
it die?
What
when
I
did
prefer,
it actually die?
That's a good question. It was a long time ago. I'll say that. You had a great column today that you put out, Hawani's Thoughts, that you put out on ESPN.com, and you laid it out. And you know, it's no surprise to you. This is not the first time this has happened. This is not the last time it will happen. People losing is not a barrier to getting a title shot. That's
but
the reality.
One, this of, one is unique, though, right? Because it's the first time since 1997 that someone who is 0-2 in their last two title fights, 0-2 in their last two fights, and neither of those fights are title fights, and they get a shot at the belt. This has never happened since 1997 when Tank Abbott fought for the heavyweight title. Now, we've had situations like the one coming up next weekend. It's a little funny that it's happening, but I considered one of Romero's losses to be in a title fight, even though it technically wasn't. He missed weight ever so slightly, yep. But still, he was booked for a title fight, so he was in the title picture. We've seen it with Holly Holm. We've seen it with Frankie Edgar, but they were involved in title fights. Aldo was not involved in a title fight, and if you're going to say that Marlon Moraes deserved to lose that fight, that it was so close, but Aldo deserved to win, then fine, let's look at the next one prior to that, and that's a Volkanovski very clear-cut loss for Jose Aldo. To me, and as I said in the article, the most egregious title fight in UFC history is when Gustafsson got knocked out and then fought DC for the belt. But the biggest difference between all of those and this one is there's three very worthy contenders on winning streaks. Off the top of my head, Jan, 9 fights, Sanhagen, 7, Aljo, 4. How do you justify this? Like, can you see any justification for this other than the fact that it's happening in Brazil?
There is not a justification based on lack of worthy contenders or anything like that. The justification, I would imagine, because I don't know this to be true, would be a business decision. But I'm not sure, and I think Aljamain Sterling on Monday, on your show, not this Monday, but I believe last Monday, made a great point, which is, does this actually sell more pay-per-views? Is this actually a more interesting fight? Now, the one thing to consider is that this fight is happening in Brazil, and Jose Aldo in Brazil is going to do better than Aljamain Sterling or Peter Yan or whoever else in Brazil. But I'm not sure how much more this moves the needle business-wise to, you know, shun worthy contenders like Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan. So I don't know that there is a justification, but I imagine it comes down to business if there is one.
You know, I was thinking of something yesterday. I was thinking of the likes of George St. Pierre, and I was thinking of the likes of John Jones and Anderson Silva, guys like that, right? I mean, I'm talking about the greats, right? And I was thinking about the way they have been viewed throughout their career. And yes, they all have their own little baggage, right? And especially John Jones and Anderson, I would say they have a lot of baggage. But when they were champions, right, when they were in their prime, why were they so beloved? Can you recall right now, off the top of your head, a situation where either one of those guys sat back and said, no, this contender isn't worthy of a shot. This contender isn't a big name. Give me that guy. I couldn't think of one. I couldn't think of a situation where either one of those guys, any one of them, and some of the other greats, where they sat back and they're like, no, this guy's on a 9-fight winning streak. No, I want to fight this guy who's on a losing streak. Never happened, right?
Yeah. I would say that the era was completely different, and they were not as savvy, I think, to what power they did wield. And I think now fighters are exerting that power in a much greater way. And it's working in their favor. Look, Henry Cejudo was calling for this and got it. I mean, I think that speaks to the power dynamic here. Now, granted, UFC and any other promoter is not going to just go along blindly with whatever the champion wants. But I do think if there's a way that it makes business sense and they can put it together, the champions do have that ability, whereas they didn't previously, or at least didn't realize that they had that previously. But no, suffice it to say, George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva were admired and became legends because of that fact, because they continued to go through whoever the next contender was.
You say savvy. You say they weren't as savvy. I would say that it's not savvy to go this route. I don't think that Henry Cejudo is doing himself any favors this week or in the last few months. Like last year, he was viewed as the guy who saved a weight class. And then he was viewed as the guy who had the stones to go up to 135 and beat the top contender at 135. He's not being viewed like that right now. He's not being viewed in the same light. And so had he said, you know what, all you guys want to see me fight Jan, I'll fight Jan. Like, you really think he's making that much more money for fighting Aldo? And if he is, that's just backwards. That makes no sense whatsoever. And if they needed Aldo to be on this card because it's Brazil, then all right, fine. But then you got to ask yourself, if this card wasn't happening in Brazil, is this title fight happening? And if the answer is no, then that's all you need to know. Like, so to me, people love GSP and Anderson Silva and those guys because they didn't sit back and cherry pick. That to me is being savvy. Not doing that, doing the complete opposite, is being unsavvy. Is unsavvy a word? I don't know. The opposite of savvy.
I would agree entirely with your point about Henry Cejudo. He is definitely not curried favor with fans. This has been a historic rise. Like, he really kind of came out of nowhere and became a fan favorite, and now a fall. He definitely doesn't have the cachet that he had. But I meant savvy. Maybe savvy's not the right word, in the sense that what he wanted, he ultimately got. Is that fair to say? Like, he called for that. Sure. He was chasing that, and he ultimately got it. And now I think with Henry Cejudo as the example, it doesn't really scale properly, right? Like, I do think it comes into play when you're talking about, let's talk about Khabib Nurmagomedov, right? With Conor McGregor, that is the fight that will do the best business. No doubt about it. There is no other option. If you want to make the most money, Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Conor McGregor is the best fight. There are plenty of other worthy contenders. You are ultimately going to be at odds in that scenario, whether if you're Khabib, do you choose to do the best business or do you choose to increase your legacy? All the talk that he is saying, and he said some more quotes today to TMZ, is that he wants to increase his legacy. We will see what happens when that money comes to the table. Yeah. And that, I think, will be the better example than Henry Cejudo over whether champions do have that power. And I think ultimately they are starting to realize that they do.
Look, when you talk about Khabib and Conor, that's a whole other set of circumstances. Like, that is maybe the biggest fight in UFC history, money-wise. You can't put Cejudo and Aldo in the same category as Khabib and Conor. I get what Cejudo's trying to say. I'm in the fight business. I'm in the prize fighting business. I'm here to make the most amount of money in my career because I was an Olympic athlete. I made no money. Now's my time to cash in. I get that, and yeah. I respect that. And if he wants to come out and say that, but don't tell me that you want to fight Jose Aldo because of his legacy, because of who he is, because he's another great. Beating Jose Aldo at 135 means nothing. Am I wrong? Like,
no.
Is there anything?
No, you're right.
To me, if you beat Peter Yan, it's way more impressive right now than beating Jose Aldo, right?
100%. There is no argument to be made that a win over Jose Aldo, who is 0-1 now at bantamweight, means more than a win over Peter Yan or Aljamain Sterling. No doubt in my mind. Again, I think this comes back to Henry Cejudo trying to make a business calculation. Did he make the right one? I'm not entirely sure. I don't know that this fight is any more sellable.
By the way, speaking of business, can I just say, you know, I've kind of dabbled in the world of boxing this week, you know, kind of just.
Yes, you have.
And it's a lot of fun. I love all this stuff. Rematch clause, and, you know, he's got 30 days,
yeah.
And if not, man, I kind of like all this stuff, and I like the different promoters, and, you know, like I said at the top, I'm enjoying the Eddie Hearn stuff, but, you know, Frank Warren's getting involved, there's Bob Arum, there's a lot of characters, you know, I like this. I feel like this is something that we don't have in our sport. We've got we got people who kind of just bloviate and say stuff, but this type of drama is something that doesn't exist. And by the way, I would argue that maybe it would be good if we had things like this, like a rematch clause. Why don't rematch clauses exist in MMA? Why isn't that a thing and it is a thing in boxing? I have no idea.
I have a foggy memory on this, but maybe I'm making this up. I think at one time they did, but maybe they don't anymore. But either way, I do like the idea of the rematch clause, but then we're getting into the conversation of immediate rematches, which – fans seem to either be strongly for or strongly against. I think not having them allows the promotion and the fighters, quite frankly, the flexibility to not have to run it back right away. Maybe, I know you're a big proponent of this, sometimes getting your confidence back and then coming back into the title fight. So I feel like there is a downside to the rematch clause in terms of being locked in to have to fight that contender, that champion again.
It's good for the loser. It's maybe not great for the winner, and it's maybe not great for the fans all the time, but it does protect the loser, especially if he's a long reigning champion. Now, you were there, right? You were at the fight, Wilder Fury.
I was there.
What was it like?
The atmosphere was electric. I'll say this. I'm a big fan of fights at MGM. The last time I was there was Conor McGregor versus Chad Mendes with the live walkouts. Absolutely insane environment. And once again, it felt as big as that. Like, the eyes of the combat sports world were on Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. The atmosphere inside was electric. The fight was electric, much credit due to Tyson Fury in that regard, because Deontay Wilder didn't really show up as people would have expected. But ultimately, I think a huge night for boxing.
Oh, a massive night for boxing. Again, anytime that boxing is... I mean, the fact that ESPN and Fox came together the way in which they did and how it was on either FS1 or ESPN, ESPN2, all week, right? All week. I mean, First Take, all the shows were just from Vegas, so you couldn't escape it. Felt so big. Everyone was talking about it. When I was at the OKC game on Friday, everyone wanted to talk to me about it, and I'm not even known to be a boxing guy, but everyone was excited. The promotion was amazing. We had never seen that before. Even when HBO and Showtime got together for Lewis Tyson, it wasn't as big because they don't have those ancillary channels where they can promote it all week long and have all the interviews and all the shows from out there and all that stuff. And so you say, all right, you say that the buzz was great and all that stuff. You were just at McGregor versus Cerrone, which was gigantic as well. Different arena. Yeah. And I agree with you, by the way. MGM, I wish they would go back to MGM. T-Mobile is a hockey arena. It's great for concerts, pro wrestling, whatever you want. But there was something about MGM. People have asked me why I like MGM so much. There's many reasons, but the main ones that come to mind. Number one, it being in the hotel where you can essentially go from your room down to the arena is a nice luxury. As far as media is concerned, there's no media room at T-Mobile. It's like you're in a tent. That's not very comfortable. They would have this big media room with the catering and all that. It was perfect for all of us. And it's just a little more quaint, right? It just it was constructed to hold boxing / MMA events. It was constructed for combat sports. I don't feel like T-Mobile's just too big. Like Mayweather and McGregor was just cavernous because everyone showed up for the main event. It just wasn't a good vibe. So compare Saturday's vibe and McGregor Cerrone, which felt bigger?
Yeah, the word I was going to use was cavernous. You know, to its benefit, T-Mobile feels new, feels clean, pristine. Everything is top of the line, and it's a great fight experience. But there is something to that MGM like old school feel of just kind of being packed in like sardine cans. Like if you wanted to go from the press area to the back, or the press area to the bathroom, or the press area to anywhere, it was a slog. You're walking through a sea of people. And there's almost something charming about that when you're thinking about the magnitude of the fight. It felt like the entire world was crammed into the arena, is the best way to describe it. And that makes you feel like you're a part of something. So really, really good venue for the biggest fights.
Best celebrity sighting?
Ooh, Magic Johnson, ooh. Steve Harvey.
Come on, Magic Johnson, Steve Harvey. You can't put Steve Harvey in the Magic Johnson conversation.
Yeah, listen, he's a mega television star. There was a lot of people there. I saw the back of Logan Paul as he was walking away. I don't know. There were a lot of celebrities there. I was working, so it wasn't.
But you were backstage,
a casual
right?
affair. I was backstage. I was on press row. We were capturing social content. Myself and Kel Dansby, who run ESPN Ringside, the boxing handles.
Yes, I'm a big fan.
I don't just
of
do
ESPN
MMA.
Ringside.
Thank you.
I love it.
Much appreciated. I take no credit. Kel does all the hard work.
You know, speaking of that account, I don't mean to interrupt you, but they posted a video last week, like late last week. Where they asked like a bunch of ESPN luminaries to predict the fight.
Yes.
And I thought it was really interesting when they asked me to partake because, you know, again, I'm not a known boxing guy, though I do love boxing and I've been watching it for many, many years. I was honored that they asked me. And then I was told afterwards by our friend Riva that I was the only one who picked Tyson Fury. And I just couldn't believe it. I thought there had to be a mistake. Surely someone's, you know, video submission got lost or they were still awaiting it to come in. And then they posted it and we had Stephen A, we had Jalen, we had Jacoby, we had Bomani, we had Pablo.
I mean,
every single one of them picked Deontay Wilder. What in the world?
Let me start with this. You mentioned, you know, being surprised that you were selected because of your boxing knowledge. But I will say that was an amalgamation of top ESPN talent.
Well, thank
the creme
you.
De
thank
la creme.
You. Well, thank you.
And
thank
you fit much. Into that category.
Well, thank you.
So
thank you.
Regardless nice of the fact that I personally know that you know nothing about boxing.
Right.
You were selected for that. Secondarily, yes, you were confirmed to be the only one to pick Tyson Fury. Mm-hmm. I thought Tyson Fury was going to win the fight. And in fact, if you ask the people I've been talking to, I thought he was going to win by KO. But I did think he was playing a very dangerous game. I thought that that strategy that he had was going to, you know, be one that he was going to potentially get the KO. And he left his trainer, Ben Davison, for that very reason, wanting to chase the KO. But he was putting himself into fire. But to his credit, he completely neutralized Deontay early and just made it look easy. And kudos to you for picking it right, being one of the only ones.
And by the way, Deontay's probably going to change his camp now. He's going to make all these changes.
Yeah.
Fury wins that fight 9 times out of 10. I mean, to me, it was one of the easiest. And, you know, I don't like to make predictions because fighters get very upset and they're super sensitive. This was so easy. I didn't even think twice. I was like, oh, you want a prediction? All right. Now, I will say I picked him via decision. I didn't think that he would stop him. But this was so easy to predict. I was shocked that anyone else was going the other way.
I will say this on Deontay Wilder. I don't believe in MMA or boxing about puncher's chance. I think that's the stupidest thing. I don't think it's real. I think it's absolutely silly to ever talk about guys having a puncher's chance. Deontay Wilder is the only fighter that I believe that with. That if it's round 12, it doesn't matter what happened in the fight before this. If he touches you with that right hand, he can end the fight. And he's been shown to not only be able to do it, but to actually execute it and to do it. Against Ortiz, he was losing that fight before he was able to come back and knock him out. So I think a lot of people believe in that. A lot of people believe in the power of Deontay Wilder. If he can touch you once, it's over. It doesn't matter. And across 12 rounds, that's a lot of opportunities. I think what a lot of people didn't consider is the fact that Tyson Fury was going to have this new aggressive game plan and really look to take Deontay's legs out and really look to take Deontay out just generally early and not give him that opportunity to be in there for a long stretch of time and sit back and wait for that right hand. So brilliant execution by Tyson Fury. Thought Deontay looked flat. He'll probably make some changes and come back better in the rematch. And quite frankly, I'm ready. I'm excited to see it.
And his excuse that the suit played a factor in his performance is laughable. And if he actually does, in fact, fire Mark Breland for throwing in the towel, he should be ashamed of himself. That's why the corner is there, to not only guide you and coach you, but to protect you from yourself. And that is a really bad look if you fire a guy for throwing in the towel in the midst of a fight that you were not winning and you were not going to win. A horrible look. And especially with the rash of deaths that we've seen in boxing late last year, that's exactly the kind of guy that I would want in my corner. So I hope that he has a change of heart and actually keeps Mark there, because that's exactly the kind of guy that I would want in my corner. Neer Krik, we are out of time, my friend. Thank you very much. Go back to your tweeting, Instagramming, and all that stuff, and we'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you on TikTok. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. I look forward to that. All right, let's keep this train moving along. Like I said, I've really enjoyed talking about this fight and all the different angles, and in the aftermath, it's been fascinating as well. And so let's say hello now to a man who knows a thing or two about Tyson Fury and knows a thing or two about boxing promotion. He is a legend as far as boxing promotion is concerned, and certainly out of the UK. He has been by Tyson's side for quite some time. He is currently his co-promoter. He was there on Saturday in Las Vegas. He is the great Frank Warren, who's kind enough to join us right now. Frank, how are you?
I'm fine, Ariel. How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well. It's great to have you on the program. And I don't know if you know this, Frank, because you were very busy over the weekend, but here at ESPN, they asked a bunch of the famous hosts to make a prediction for the fight. And they asked like 10 or so of us. Of the 10, only one man, Frank, only one soul picked Tyson Fury to win this fight. Do you know who that person was, Frank?
Tell me.
The man you're speaking to, Frank. I could not believe it. I couldn't believe that everyone was picking Deontay Wilder to win this fight.
No,
and I know the world was he was the favorite. Were you shocked by all this talk going into the fight that everyone was writing off your guy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, he won the first fight.
Yes.
He got robbed, and he took, you know, I look on fighters' styles and so forth, and looking at both the guys, what did you have? You had Tyson, who is a consummate boxer. You know, he's got great reflexes, and people are underestimating his punching power. And obviously, with Deontay, he's a big, big, hard-hitting, and probably one of the hardest-hitting heavyweight, certainly in the last 30 years in heavyweight division. But he's not a great boxer, and I've seen numerous fights of his where he's behind on the cards, but he has that punch to pull out the bag and change a fight dramatically and stop the guy. What he did with Tyson in the first fight, you look at that last round, Tyson was down, and I thought it was all over. You know, I'll be very honest. But he got up, and by the end of the round, he was gone, Deontay. He caught Deontay with a left hook, and Deontay was struggling to hold on. If that fight had been another minute longer, I think Tyson would have stopped him. So you leave that fight, you know, he won it, I thought he won it, he got the draw, but you leave that fight and you think, so what is he going to do any different? And Deontay's a 34-year-old guy. He's not going to change his style. He is what he is. Whereas Tyson is very adaptable. And when we made the fight, I was asked what the British press, what I thought, and I said, he's going to go and fight him. He's going to stand there and he's going to go and fight him, take center ring, put him on the back foot. And if you put Deontay on the back foot, you nullify what he's got, because he has to set himself to throw his bombs. And Tyson didn't allow that to happen. So for me, the first round of the second fight was the 13th round of the last fight. He just controlled it. He was back in control, and he pushed him and pushed him. And I, for the life of me, I don't know. And a lot of British press really fancied Deontay to stop him. And I didn't get it. You know, I'd done quite a few interviews. I said, I think Tyson would back him down, he'd do a job on him, and by the sixth, seventh round, he'd stop him. And it turned out it was the seventh round, but that's exactly what he did. He broke him down. He didn't let him into the fight.
Now, for those that may not understand, because primarily here we cover mixed martial arts, but a lot of our fans love boxing as well, could you help us understand this? Top Rank promotes Tyson Fury, but you also promote Tyson Fury, and he's also managed by MTK Global. How does that work?
Right. In America, in the States, Top Rank and ourselves, we promote together, and Top Rank basically organise the shows. If he fights in the UK, then it would be me, and the rest of the world, we between us we're promoters. So that's where we are, and we're working together, and we're working on what we're doing with the next fight as we speak. So that's the situation. I am his promoter, and Top Rank are his promoter in America.
Okay, so everyone wants to know about the next fight. Have you, in fact, heard back, like officially, legally, from Wilder's camp that they will exercise this rematch clause and that's the next fight?
I haven't heard officially, but unofficially, that's what I'm hearing they want to do. And Deontay's gone on record saying he wants that to happen, and that's what I understand the position is.
Would you be surprised if at some point he has a change of heart and doesn't exercise this, or in your mind, do you think it's fait accompli, he's going to do this?
I think he'd do it. I think he says himself he's a warrior, he's a fighting man. I think he will do it. But anything can happen in the sport, as you know. It depends. We will see what happens. But I think Tyson Fury's head and shoulders above all these guys, and he was a fit Tyson Fury. And people forget about it. They forget with Tyson. When he went into that last fight, he dropped 150 pounds in 6 months, which is very debilitating. This time round, he's had 14 months of his weight being stable. He's been very active in the gym. He's had a couple of fights. He trained even for the WWE appearance that he had. So he's been very stable. That's how he's been. So you're not going to get some big guy that you think, which they fought for the first fight. There was the lineal champion, was out of shape, and they're going to do a job on him. He's on the money now, and he'll be even more on the money for the next one. So in the back of Deontay's mind, what does he think he can do any different than he did in the second fight? So I don't know where he's going to go with that mentally.
You said this to BBC Radio recently, this week. You said, I prefer to go straight to Joshua, but that is the contract. It has to be honored unless we can reach some accommodation for him, Wilder, to step aside. We could pay him to step aside if he wants to do that, but that is his choice. End quote. Is that possible? Could you actually pay Wilder to step aside so that you can pursue the Joshua fight?
Well, that was in response to what Hearn said. He said that, this fight, that this should be... they should sort out a step aside, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I don't know. I mean, the situation is that if he invokes the fight, then I'm sure he'll want the fight. As regarding anything else to get to the Joshua fight, that's going to take a lot of hard work to get straight to it. And if we can get to it, I'd like to see it as a fan. I mean, I want to see the best. I want to see Tyson, who's the number one, get back the three belts that Joshua's holding. That Tyson never lost in the ring. He gained that because Tyson vacated. Of course we want to see that. It'd be the first time that two British fighters have fought to unify a title. And more importantly, the first time in heavyweight history, the four belts have been on the line. So to me as a fan, I want to see that.
So would it be fair to say that when you heard that Wilder was going to invoke the clause, part of you was a little disappointed?
No, it's not that I'm disappointed. I mean, you know, we're in boxing, and it is what it is. And I just, you know, I'm sure he'll invoke it. I'm quite confident he's going to do that. You know, why wouldn't he? I mean, obviously it'd be a lucrative situation for him to do that. But mentally, where is he with this? I mean, it was quite a one-sided fight. And he was totally dominant against him. He had him on the floor a few times. And he hurt him. And as I say, you know, you're his trainer and so forth. What do you feel you can do to change it? In if there's a third fight, what can you do? And I'm not sure. And by the way, you know, I was listening a bit to your previous conversation. Mark Breland did the right thing. It's better to live to fight another day. That's what happened to Jeff Lacy against Joe Calzaghe. They let it go on too long. Jeff Lacy was never the same man after that fight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's why I think he should be applauded and not fired.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm with you on that.
Thank you. You know, let me ask you this. If there was no rematch clause, if the door was open to finally do this Joshua Fury fight, do you in fact believe that Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua want to make this fight happen, or do you think that they're going on this media tour this week because they know that it's probably not going to happen?
Well, you know, that's a very good point, Ariel. You know, when you look at it, he's got two mandatories coming up against Pulev and Usyk, have been ordered by the two governing bodies for the belts that he holds. So he's got those coming up. And Hearn was very, very much aware of that. And it was no secret there was a rematch clause against Deontay. Everybody who knew anything about boxing was aware of it because it had been discussed on many occasions with all the people involved for the fight. So we all knew what we were contractually bound to do. As I say, he's got his two fights. And Hearn, you know, at the moment, you thought it was his guy had been fighting the weekend. He's banged on a lot about getting this fight, let's get it on the public deserve it. Of course the public deserve it. We all want to see it, but he knows what the problems are. And those problems would have to be resolved. And they're not easy to resolve, but they're, you know, if everybody was interested in doing it, then obviously we would all try it. But it's at the end of the day, it's down to Deontay Wilder. He's the guy at the moment who has that rematch option. And it seems he wants to do the fight again.
How difficult of a negotiation would it be if, in fact, the door was open? You know, you got all these sides involved. You've got Eddie involved, and there appears to be no love lost there. How hard would it actually be to get this fight done, Joshua versus Fury?
Well, I think Joshua versus Fury will happen. My only concern with Joshua, he doesn't get clips by, if he does fight Pulev or anybody for that matter, he doesn't get clips. He's wobbled a few times in his last few fights. He was badly exposed by Ruiz in New York. Before that, Dillian White had wobbled him. Klitschko had had him on the floor. I think it was Takin that called him with a shot. So, you know, he has shown vulnerability over his last few fights, if he's still there at the time. To get it on is really simplistic. It's a straight down the middle job. And there's no, you know, he gets, before it was, you know, all about margins, who was going to get what. But Tyson's the guy now. Tyson went to America and conquered it. And when AJ went to the States, it all unraveled before everybody's eyes. So Tyson's the man. I don't think anybody who knows anything about boxing knows he's the number one. But, you know, it's a 50-50 deal. It's very simple when that fight happens. Now, if in between that fight happening, both the guys have got to fulfill their contractual obligations, then that's what's going to happen. Why eventually it will get on.
Why 50-50 and not 60-40, say, in favor of your guy, since he is the man, since he has conquered America?
I'm sure Tyson will be up for that, but then we go round in circles again. Right. We want to get this fight on, let the fans see it. But, you know, I'm only saying what I think. Tyson may have a different view on that. He's the guy getting in the ring. At the end of the day, it's going to be his decision. And both of them got to remain undefeated. But I can't see... which I've said from the beginning, I always fancied Tyson to beat Wilder when we made the first fight. I don't see it being any different next time round. So I think our guy, and anything can happen in boxing, you know, one punch can dramatically change a fight, as we've seen on many times with Deontay. But I just don't see that happening with Tyson. So if Tyson's got to have his rematch, and fulfill his contractual commitments, then he'll do that, and then we move on to that fight. But I'm worried about what with AJ. That's the worry for me.
Do you agree that if AJ fights Tyson at some point in the next year or so, that it has to happen in the UK, that doing it in Las Vegas or Saudi Arabia or anywhere outside of England is absolutely ludicrous?
Well, you know, it should take place in the UK. There's no doubt about that, because that's where they're two British guys. But the problem is, well, it's not a problem. The fact is, one of these guys is going to, well, they're both putting a lot on the line, and there's going to be a loser. And so they've got to go where the money, where they can earn the most money. And I get that and understand that. You know, in the UK, soccer is a massive game. A lot of our star players leave the UK and go and play for foreign clubs. Like Gareth Bale went off to play at Real Madrid. Aaron Ramsey went off to play in Italy for the money. And they do it because they've got a short career, and it's the same with boxers. They have a short career. So if somebody comes up with a phenomenal offer, then obviously it's something that's got to be considered by all the parties, and a decision's got to be made on that. But obviously, you know, we would all love to see the fight if it was to happen in the UK. That's where it all makes the most sense.
Now, how about you and Eddie? Because when I asked Tyson about Eddie a week or so ago, he interrupted me right away about Eddie's comments that, you know, there were issues in the camp. He called him all kinds of names and said he doesn't care about what Eddie thinks. My understanding is your family and Eddie's family, there's a long-running feud, to put it mildly there. Could you do business with Eddie Hearn? And could you tell us, what do you think of young Eddie Hearn?
Well, I've never ever spoken to him. I know his dad well, because his dad and I actually worked together in the past, many years ago. So I know, well, we actually was in business for a while together in the snooker business. What do I think? Well, he's doing what he's got to do. You know, his only problem for me is that he thinks he's more important than the fighters and the fans, and that is what it is. I mean, at the moment, he's got this deal going in the States on DAZN, which has been very lucrative for him and for the fighters. I don't think they've built, with all that money, they haven't built a star yet. He hasn't built a star. They've had to rely on bringing other fighters in from other promoters to boost it, such as Alvarez. But it is, you know, that's his business, and I don't really get involved. And I think it's the first time I've really commented on it. I don't remember having too many conversations. I just get on with it. I've been around a long time, so I don't really care what he's doing, or for that matter, what anybody else is doing. All I focus on is our shows. He's always got something to say about everybody. You know, if you were before the fight, Wilder was going to knock out Tyson. When we made he then went on to say, or previously said, Tyson was the most boring fighter ever. I mean, wrong on every count there. I mean, to call him boring is unbelievable. And in a year, or less than a year, you look at the turnaround. You know, Joshua was top of the tree. Everybody was, you know, big attraction and so forth. As I mentioned, when he went to New York, it was a complete debacle, and he was absolutely he was exposed badly and give the blueprint for anybody who wants to fight him. And it was, you know, and he won his title back, and he'd done it in good style, in as much that he trained hard, he got his tactics right, he was fit, and it was a good game plan. But Ruiz was a disgrace. I mean, the guy looked like he was training in his larder. You know, we know he's got fast hands, but he had no legs in that fight. He came in even bigger than he did for the previous fight. So it played into AJ's hands to get his title back. But I know what anyone knows who knows anything about boxing, what the blueprint is to beat AJ. And I've got to tell you something. The problem he will have is with Tyson Fury, who is a great exponent of exposing people's weaknesses. And for me, that again, there would only be one for that.
I find it amazing that you guys run in the same circles. You're promoting the same sport. You've never had a conversation with Eddie Hearn ever? You've never shook his hand? You've never talked to him?
Never spoken to him. Never had a conversation ever. No. Well, no, you know, it's just not happened. I mean, you know, it is what it is. And
could you do business with him? Could you put on a fight with him?
My job is to do the best for my guy. And if the best for my guy means I've got to work with Hearn or, you know, Bob, as we did. I mean, we did the best we could to take it. We didn't have to do the deal with ESPN, mm-hmm. but we did it because it gave Tyson an audience and another platform. I've got to do the best for my guy, and that's where we're at, and that's what we do. So to get this fight on and deliver it? Of course we would. I'm not getting married to him. You know, if we sign a contract, nothing in the contract says I've got to like him.
Fair enough. By the way, is it true that when Tyson Fury signed with WWE, he did not tell you?
That is true, yeah.
Well, how is that possible?
Well, what happened was he took his son to see a WWE match. We got a phone call. Then he took him to see a match, and next minute there was a fracas at the ringside, and then he was involved in it. And I sort of heard about it, and then he said, "I'm going to do it. I fancy doing it." Well, good luck to you. My only concern was at the time I was worried about the cut. It was because it was quite near to the time when he received a cut from the volume fight. But that was it. That's Tyson. He's a one-off. I mean, you know, this is a guy that's basically burst into song after a fight. This is a guy that's got a TV series going here in the UK. Was getting big numbers. A guy on Amazon had the number one best-selling sports book over here in the UK, and was on the Sunday Times bestseller list. He just does things. He's very spontaneous.
Okay, so if in fact the Trilogy fight happens, realistically, when do you think it happens, and where would you like it to happen?
I'd like to see it in the UK. I'd like to see it in the UK, but I'm being very realistic that I think I think unless we can generate the money we need to generate from the UK, it will go abroad. And I don't think it will go on, in my opinion. I don't think it will go on until probably late autumn.
Late autumn, okay. And if it happened in the UK?
Or fall, as you call it. Sorry, fall.
Right,
no.
I'm Canadian, so I know what autumn is all
about. Oh, so there you are.
Yep.
Okay, sorry, man.
In the UK, where would be the perfect place for it? Which stadium? Old Trafford?
Well, Old Trafford or Wembley, but the problem you've got that time of year, they don't have a roof on the stadium. Mm. And if it was going late, then you're talking about it's going to be very cold. It's, you know, you're approaching winter, so that would be a problem. You go to in Cardiff, they have a roof on the stadium there, the Millennium Stadium, that you could do it there, but the capacity is a little bit is smaller than Wembley, and you know that's one option.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, you've got to go where it can make money. You know, you can go back over the years. You think about Muhammad Ali, George Foreman. They went to Africa, the Thriller in Manila. They went where the money was. So it's not unusual. It's not an unusual thing.
So are you saying that it's possible it happens in somewhere other than Las Vegas, Nevada, or the UK? It could happen somewhere outside of there?
It could do if somebody was to make an offer. And at the moment, nobody's made an offer, but, you know, things do happen. And obviously, the thing about Tyson is he's, after this fight, he's really, I think he's gone from being just a, not saying just a like that, you can't say that lightly, from being, you know, the lineal and also now the WBC champion. He's a crossed over. He's crossed over through doing the wrestling, through doing the other appearances and so forth. And he's become like that old style heavyweight champion that everyone knows. You remember the most famous man, sportsman on the planet was the heavyweight champion of the world for years. You look at Joe Louis, you look at Ali, Foreman, you go through all these big names, Marciano, and I think he's in that ilk now that he has crossed over. I've spoken to guys I've had calls and messages from all around the world, people who watch the fight, which I've not had that before for a lot. Well, I've not had it before, to be quite honest, and I think he's really crossed over. I think he's got a global audience now.
Yeah, it really is
especially
amazing.
Especially with that performance. Excuse me for interrupting. Especially with that performance.
It really is amazing to see what has become of him and how good this is for boxing. I would argue right now that the two most famous fighters on the planet are Tyson Fury and Conor McGregor. And so it's great to see two European fighters from the same neck of the woods, so to speak, doing what they're doing. Could I ask, are you an MMA fan? Do you appreciate mixed martial arts?
I've got to be honest. I've not watched a lot of it, but I admire what Dana White's done. I think it's amazing what he's done and how he's built this amazing business in such a short space of time and turn it into such an industry. I think it's fabulous. I have watched some of it, but I'm sort of an old school guy as regarding the Marquess of Queensbury rules, and that's where I'm at. But the spectacle of it, and obviously all the work that these guys put into it, the training and so forth, you know, I do appreciate that and do respect them for it.
Yeah, you know, I got to say, it's as a fan of both, and I obviously cover mixed martial arts, the way boxing is structured for me, I think, is a lot better for the fighters, and it's just fun. We don't have things like mandatory title defense and rematch clauses and the fact that you can get these promoters together. None of these things exist. If you fight for the UFC, you kind of have to play by their rules, and I don't know how closely you follow their business, but I would argue, as someone who follows both, that despite the fact that people say that mixed martial arts is killing boxing and that boxing is struggling and all this stuff, it's quite the opposite. Both are doing well. Both are healthy. But I would even argue that boxing is healthier than mixed martial arts.
Well, I agree with what you're saying there. They're two different disciplines, two different sports, and I think sometimes they've got two different sets of fans. And that's what it is. You know, some people will watch the MMA and watch the boxing. Some like, you know, some like the boxing and not the MMA, and vice versa. But the one thing about it, what I find quite refreshing with MMA, is that guys can have a lot of losses on their record and still be involved in big fights. Where we've seen over the years, you get a few losses and suddenly you slip down the ladder and you disappear.
That's a great point.
Out of the top echelon.
That's a great point. That's a phenomenal point. By the way, two last things for you. What do you make of, I know you've been asked about this on other platforms, but I'd be remiss if I don't ask you, what do you make of Wilder's excuse that the walkout outfit what led to his legs getting tired and his performance suffering? What do you make of that when you hear that?
I wish he never said that. You know, he got beat, and he got beat by the better man on the night, and I'm a big believer in that. You know, he must have tried that outfit on a few times because it was made to measure for him. Wasn't one they just showed up and said, put that on. So he must have known what the weight was. And, you know, I see an interview, somebody sent me an interview that he did saying that he was training, carrying more weight on him or something, whatever it was. But it's totally irrelevant. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. And, you know, I just think of maybe soldiers going at the battle with, like, you know, 100 pounds on their back with a big and climbing up hills and bullets flying around them. It is what it is. You know, I think it's a pretty weak excuse for the beating that he got.
Yes, I agree with that. And I know Tyson arrived back home yesterday, and I saw the amazing reception that he received. Are you guys just getting, you know, bombarded? I'm sure he's being pulled in a million different directions. Oh. Opportunities coming up for him. This must be incredibly exciting, right?
It is, and it is exciting. But, you know, he's been in the States in camp since January the 1st. So it's a long time. He's got children. He's got five children, and he's home now. And he needs some time with them. And, it's been an exhausting camp. It's been quite intense. And he needs to chill a bit. So, you know, take a few days off, let the dust settle, and then obviously I'm sure he'll do some media stuff, and then he wants to get a break, and he deserves a break. He's worked very hard in the last 18 months or so, whatever it is, 19 months, you know, to come back fights and so forth. It's the busiest he's ever been as a boxer, and as I mentioned earlier, all the things that he's done outside the ring, they've been quite time consuming for him. But he needs some time out. You know, he's there. He's had great. He's had magnificent press both sides of the Atlantic, for that matter, around the world. And he should now enjoy it. As I say, relax, and then we'll work on what he's going to do next, and that'll be his decision to make.
Yeah, he's a great fighter. He's also a phenomenal promoter. The fact that he did all that media leading up to it was really a sight to see.
It's the second as a promoter. It's the second coming of Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Now, I know things get a little tricky when you start comparing him to Ali because of what Ali stood for and the politics and whatnot, but I understand your point.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and you know, it's a funny thing because obviously, you know, when you look back, I was a kid at the time when he first fought Muhammad Ali, and I remember coming to UK, and I remember my dad taking me along, and we met him and so forth. I met him, I was like, you know, this guy was just like amazing. But the older generation didn't really like him. He had to leave the States and come here. And he made some statements at the time which were quite, you know, racist, in as much, you know, blacks should marry whites and white man's the devil and so forth. And, you know, but he became a humanist, didn't he, over the years. He was a young man. People say things when they're young. You know, Tyson has said things. I probably, when other kids said things that you, and maybe yourself, that you regret. But as he became older, he became one of the most loved and respected sportsmen to have ever walked the earth, and quite deservedly so. He was voted BBC television opener, which is a, you know, is our, one of our terrestrial broadcasters. They do a poll every year, which is for BBC Sports Personality of the Year. And it's quite a big gig over here. They did BBC Sports Personality of the Century, and Muhammad Ali won it. All the British fans like to know Muhammad Ali. You think about all the British sportsmen, right, and all the things that we've done, winning the World Cup, he won it. So people do say silly things, and they do change. And where I compare him with Muhammad Ali is just as a promoter. I mean, Muhammad Ali, unbelievable. You know, the film When We Were Kings, one of the most best boxing, you know, scenarios, but, you know, film seeing going on what happens behind the scenes. I mean, he was just a joy to watch in that with the thrill of it. It was just brilliant stuff. And, you know, if Tyson can be as loved as a tenth as what Muhammad Ali loved, then that's a great job.
Frank, this has been a real pleasure. It's been really nice talking to you. I really appreciate your time. And by the way, your Twitter page is very good. I don't know who runs that page, but whoever does, give them a nice little pat on the back. I think they do a phenomenal job. I noticed it, especially leading up to this. And I know you're getting into the podcast business yourself. You're a man of many talents and many trades. So keep it up. And I wish you and the team nothing but the best. And again, thank you very much for coming on the show today. It was really great talking to you.
It's a pleasure, Ariel. And don't forget, we believe we've got the next big thing coming through with Daniel Dubois, who's fighting Joe Joyce, two undefeated Brits. And the Brits are on the roll in the heavyweight division. That's on April 11th. And I think that's going to be a cracker as well.
I look forward to that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ariel. All the best to you, my friend.
All right. There he is, Frank Warren, the head man over at the Queensberry Promotions and a longtime promoter for Tyson Fury and many of the greats. Chris Eubank, longtime friend of the show as well. He worked with him. I got to say, I really enjoy talking to these promoters, man. It's a lot of fun. We don't have characters like this. You know, obviously back in his prime, Dana was the man, and he is, in many people's eyes, the greatest combat sports promoter of all time, and you can certainly, certainly give him that title. He had a different kind of passion back then than perhaps he does now, and that's understandable. As he said prior to the sale of the UFC, that if his friends, you know, the Fertitta brothers would sell the company, that he would leave as well. And I think part of the reason for that is, you know, you have a different kind of passion once you have won the race. But these guys that I've talked to this week, Eddie Hearn, Frank Warren, and I've talked to others over my career as well, the likes of Bob Arum, it's just fun. The boxing business is fun. It's fun to cover, and I've really enjoyed it. So that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that conversation. I want to thank Frank Warren and his team for setting that up and coming on the show. Some late breaking news before we move along to TST. This, according to MMAJunkie.com, they posted this while we were taping the show. Tito Ortiz has had his victory over Alberto El Patron from this past December overturned. It's now a no decision per the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation. They are not saying why it has been overturned, but it has officially been changed to a no decision. This is the quote that they gave MMA Junkie, quote, "The results of the fight were changed pending further investigation." And they did not say the reason, but that is very bizarre. Usually when a fight is overturned, we know why it's overturned. In this particular case, they've just overturned it and not told the world. And again, Texas has been under fire this past month with the result and the officiating at UFC 247, the result of the main event between Dominic Reyes and John Jones. And now here's another strange Texas thing. Like, if California or Nevada would overturn a result, we would know why. But here they're not telling us why, but it certainly leads to a lot of speculation. So we'll see what happens. Very, very strange. This happened just as we were taping the interview with Frank Warren, so I thought it would be worth passing along to all of you. All right. Time now for everyone's favorite segment of the week. It is time.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Ariel, thank you for the introduction. I have no idea what you just said to bring me on, but I am joining you happily from Copenhagen in Denmark from a 5-star hostel. I sent you a photo of the room. It is very luxurious living we have here in Copenhagen, and it has been a blast. I've been to Oslo. I've been to Copenhagen. Last Friday night was the Halsey concert in Oslo at the Spectrum Theater. It was an amazing experience. One of the best nights of my life for sure. Shout out Halsey. I love you. But I do have a bonus pick with the Europeans. This is now the second concert I've been to one in Edinburgh in Scotland and now in Oslo. And at both concerts, I have been instructed by the people behind me to sit down. because I'm a crazy, loud American, and I'm trying to rage, I'm trying to have a good time, especially when I may be encouraged by some liquids that I've consumed earlier in the night. And I've flown across the world to see my girl Halsey in action, and people are telling me, yelling at me to sit down because they don't want to stand up and join the fun. So I don't know what it is with the Europeans, but come on, let's clean it up here, have some fun, stand up, go crazy, because I want to go crazy for Halsey. Okay, so that's my rant. Now, to last week's minimalist tip, I stand by the tip of packing lightly and choosing your outfits accordingly, but I am regretting some of the actions that I've had over the past 48 hours in Oslo. Now, in Copenhagen, I've been spending a lot of time in Oslo. I was with a bunch of Canadians and some French people, and then last night in Copenhagen, there was like this towny bar I was at, and I was talking to these three guys there, just me and these three guys in the entire bar, and they were just blowing cigarette smoke in my face. So now all my clothes smell like cigarettes and baguettes. And a part of me is really just wishing that I had a sweatshirt, like another sweatshirt I could wear. I have one more day left, and it's really going to be a struggle to figure out what to wear. But as a minimalist, we always figure it out given our resources. Now, on to this week's minimalist tip. This is somewhat related to something that I said around the holidays about when you are gifting someone something to gift them experiences rather than gift them physical objects. And I just kind of want to add on to that point here is that I like to go out and have experiences. This whole vacation, this solo vacation, has been an experience in itself. I like to spend my money and save up my money by not buying things so that I can save up money to do things like this, to go out and see the world and learn and just get a better idea of how the rest of the world works in comparison to the U.S. and to compare my life to other people's lives and put myself in these people's shoes, you know, in Copenhagen. And also, could I live like this? Could they live like Americans? These are very beneficial experiences. This is why I love traveling, because I love seeing how the other half lives. And I could not do that if I did not save up my money and spend that money on experiences rather than things, because this is the kind of thing that brings me happiness, joy, and fulfillment rather than any one material thing that I could buy with that money. Lastly, I have since deleted my Twitter, but some screenshots have been sent to me of people praising TST's Tips of the Week and that TST deserves a raise, of which I am very honored. And Ariel, I would just like to say I have tremendous respect for you and that you have always known what your calling was in life from a very early age. I've never had a calling. I've been searching for a calling, and I didn't really find it until about 2 days ago when I got to Copenhagen. And I have found my calling, and I would now like to take a page out of Conor McGregor's book, and I would like to formally announce my retirement from Aria Hawani's MMA show.
What?
I have found my calling in life. It is to ride around in Copenhagen all day, winter, summer, morning, night, ride around all day, and drink coffee in the many coffee shops, and write short stories. That will be my life. I am staying in Copenhagen.
Really?
I am not coming back. It has been an honor serving the nose, Ariel. It has been an honor getting to know you. Thank you for everything you have done for me. And I know we will meet again, but until then, I say peace. I'm out of here.
Wait, what? What is going on here? That was, first of all, the first, I don't know how long that was, but the first half or so, I was like, this is amazing. You know, I missed TST. I know he's out there. He seems to be having a good time. I swear to God, as I said at the top, I had no idea what he said. I asked him to send something. First, I wanted to do it live, but he said his phone wasn't working. And he said he'll send something in recorded. And so I was down with that. And things were going great. I had no idea. So let me bring it. So in case you're wondering, if TST's not there, how are we actually putting this together? Well, we have another very talented and capable producer manning the ship, Travis Rockhold of ESPN, who's back there in Bristol. Travis, did you know that – is this true? What is going on here? Is he actually done? Did he just quit?
I don't think it's true, but if it is, I'm okay with that because I'm taking claims over this podcast. Then I'm
all right.
So I'm going to own it. So if he has to fight me to get this back, then I guess.
Oh, my gosh. What do people think of – I don't know if you know that Troy has a weekly spot on my podcast, his minimalist tip of the week. He's a minimalist. What do people at ESPN Audio think of young Troy?
We usually end up just saying that's Farkas being Farkas when he tells us a crazy story. I don't know if it's been announced here, but like he doesn't have a couch.
Yep. Like, we've talked about that.
And we have some new producers here, and they're just like, baffled by him. He's an interesting character. Is probably the best way to describe Farkas.
Yes, he's a minimalist, so he doesn't really own a lot.
I don't get the couch thing.
He eats on the ground. He writes short stories at 4 a.m. He traveled to Europe with just a backpack, not like those big backpacks, like an actual just like school bag. Wore a bunch of layers to save space.
Wait, he layered on the plane?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was his tip last week. He wore two pairs of pants so he could save some space in the bag.
Oh, Lord.
He's an amazing character, and I'm not sure whether to laugh or to be sad about the fact that he just quit right here on the show today.
I don't think he's quitting. I think it's like a fake retirement like Connor.
Oh, see? You're smarter than, you know what? I got worried there for a second. You're right. Are you an MMA guy?
I like to watch a little bit.
Okay. See, now you know, you're right. He did reference Connor. That's right. Okay. Whew. Now I feel a lot better. That was good on his part. That was a nice curveball. Did you listen to it beforehand?
I didn't.
Okay. So we just threw something on the air there without checking before.
Yeah, that's a podcast. We can edit it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I say edit none of that because it was phenomenal. And I appreciate you filling in for this week. And who knows, maybe you are the new producer and you'll get your own segment as well each and every week.
Sounds good.
All right. Travis, you can hit the music. I think that's it for us this week. What an interesting way to end today's program. Wow. Troy in Copenhagen announcing his retirement but doing a fake retirement. I think that's the first time I ever referred to him as Troy on this show as well. Usually it's TST, but his real name is Troy Farkas. And yes, in fact, he did delete his Twitter. It is no longer with us. But I think Twitter, you can delete it and bring it back. That's what I've been told. Anyway, all right, we're out of time. Thank you very much to TST for sending that in. Thank you very much to New York Rick for joining us as always. Thank you very much to Frank Warren for joining us. That was fascinating as well. Really enjoyed that conversation. And thanks to all of you for continuing to download and rate and subscribe and tell the world about this Wednesday podcast. Last week, we got a lot of feedback after my very interesting conversation with Josh Fabia and Diego Sanchez. And I've talked to Josh a whole bunch of times via text message since that interview, almost making me want to not do that interview ever again or rethink doing that interview. But no, it was good. It was good. I appreciate everyone who listened and downloaded and wrote to me about it. And I look forward to continuing doing this Wednesday podcast again. On Saturday, the UFC is back on ESPN Plus. Title fight, just the fourth title fight in the short history of the UFC on ESPN. And all four of them have been on ESPN Plus. And this one is for the vacant flyweight title. It's Joseph Benavidez going up against Davison Figueiredo. I'm looking forward to that. I think this means the division is alive and well. Everyone else today seems to think otherwise. They've got a big opportunity on Saturday to prove otherwise. For now, we are out of time. Again, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it very much. I'll talk to you next week.